Brother Orr, while you're there?
Two.
Okay. Thank you so much for being my special guest again tonight, my brother. Again, it's been an honor, always an honor and a pleasure to speak with you. And as stated to all of my listeners, we're very, very blessed to have an opportunity to speak with someone who's a paramount king. He's an author. And let me tell you a little bit about him. Orr Wahehe Metoran Comet has been a member of the Osara Set Society since 1975. He was appointed Orwa, which is paramount king, by Shechem Ashechem, Dr. Raoul Nefer Amen, who is the chief priest and king of the Osara Set Society. As Orwa, he's responsible for guiding the lives of Osara Set's members and the society's activities in Maryland, Virginia, and Washington, D.C. He's a member of the society's Carry Hair Priesthood and headed Osara Set's African Support Project. He holds a bachelor's degree in African American Studies and a master's degree in education, both from Howard University, and he has named and supervised the naming of hundreds of men, women, and children using the process described in his book, African Names, The Ancient Egyptian Keys to Unlocking Your Power and Destiny. To everybody who's tuned in, I just want to say hetepu. Welcome to all of the members of the Osara Set Society and everybody that's tuned in. We'll tell you how to, you can get this book, African Names, by show's end. But we are in for a treat today. We're going to be discussing the laws, the 11 laws of God in particular, the law of Ma'at. Of course, we just moved into the Haruka-Hudi cycle, but we're going to be discussing the law of Ma'at tonight. Brother Orwa, it's always a pleasure to have you on, sir. Thank you again for being my guest. I look forward to the show tonight.
Etepu, and thank you for the opportunity.
Always a pleasure. As mentioned, we're going to be talking about the law of Ma'at. For those people who are unfamiliar with the law of Ma'at, it is one of the 11 laws of God, also known as the Tree of Law, on the Tree of Life, also known as the Paut Neturu. Brother Orwa, for those who don't know anything about what we'll be discussing tonight, could you lay a foundation for our listeners, for starters, me to talk about what are the 11 laws of God, and then we can talk specifically about the law of Ma'at.
Okay, yeah, let's do that. Let's start with our scriptures out of ancient Kemet. There's a scripture called the Book of Known Manifestations of Ra and Overthrowing of Pep, which the oldest written records around 2100 B.C. And in this scripture, the Supreme Being, who refers to itself as Neb-er-Chir, talks about how it brought the world into existence, how it manifested what we call the universe, etc. And the first thing it did was it created itself as the creator through its own words, through the words uttered through its mouth. And then it says it rests the foundation in the law, which is Ma'at, before it created anything else. So what that scripture says, that the Supreme Being, the world in which we live, the universe in which it's created, all that's been manifested, is based on law. Everything operates through law. And that the basis of this law is the foundation of man's experience in the world, because man was being created as an image and likeness, in the likeness of the Supreme Being. In the scripture, it further says, refers to itself as Osiris. And Osiris is the term that is talks about the Supreme Being, but it's Osir, which is Osiris, a modification of the word Osiris, is a term that our ancestors used to speak about the person, the man or woman who has manifested their divine potential on earth. So our ancestors were very clear that we are divine beings. Our purpose in the world is to awaken that divinity, manifest that divinity, and live on earth as divine beings. But to do that, we have to understand the law, because everything rests on laws. So the 11 laws of Ma'at are the foundational principles around which our spirit operates. Because we have two aspects of being. We have our consciousness, that part of our being which perceives and is aware of things, evaluates things. And then we have our spirit, which is the functional part of being. It's the doing part of being. And so consciousness and spirit is that mystical marriage that takes place in heaven. When these two come together, then what I will can be also what is manifested in the world. So as God created the world as a vehicle through which to experience its true qualities, its true essence, then man is created in the likeness of God such that man can then become the vessel through which the Supreme Being is able to experience and express itself in the world as a divine being. So what do we mean by, because this is a very important point. I don't want to rush through it, because so many people are in the world today trying to figure out, well, some people are just walking around the world in a bliss, but many people are trying to figure out, well, what's the purpose of meaning? What's the purpose of being? Why is there life? I was listening to a radio show yesterday. I forget the name of the show. I forget the name of the author. But he was talking about a survey that was done young people between 18 and 24. And the two things that stuck out in terms of the questions that were asked or the answers that they received were that, one, that these young people are yearning to find out, well, what's the purpose of life? Why am I here? And a lot of people, the young people, become disillusioned when they can't get the right answer, and so they consider, well, you know, committing suicide, which is a big problem amongst young people. Our ancestors were very clear. They said, man, know thyself. Well, what do they mean by thyself? What is the self that they talked about knowing? And the answer is that we're divine beings. We're not human beings. We're divine beings. And this is a very critical point and distinction that we make, because how you see yourself is going to circumscribe how you and what you think you can accomplish in the world. You know, we're very keen on telling our children, young people, that, you know, you can do anything. You can become anything you want to be. And it's both true and false at the same time. It's only true if they can tap into that aspect of the divinity within them that is unlimited and all-powerful, that's able to manifest any and all things. Not any and all things at the same time, but any and all things at different points in time. But most people fall short of that because the other part is you tell them that they're human. And humans are what? Humans are frail. Humans are mistake-prone. Humans are, you know, you've seen the commercial, I'm only human. It's the final, it's the excuse that people give for describing why they made a mistake. Well, the fact that people see themselves as human means that they're accepting the fact that they're limited. They're accepting the fact that they have frailties. They're accepting the fact that they can't know what's right and what's wrong. That the best choice they have is a 50-50 coin flip. So, you know, humans would probably be better off, many people would be better off if they just flip the coin every time they make a decision and go with that. Because most of the decisions that people make are wrong because they're coming out of the lower parts of being. They're coming out of the parts of the brain that are functional and strongest in the animal kingdom. So the linkage between the animal kingdom and the human kingdom and the divine beings that we are has to all operate through our brain. So it's a critical that to understand the 11 laws of Ma'at, that we have to understand how these different laws function and operate through the part of the being we call the spirit. Because again, the spirit is the functional part of being. So the 11 laws give us the keys to each part of the spirit. And if we follow the keys, if we follow the manual, then we'll be successful in operating that part of the spirit. And if we're successful, then we are awakening and manifesting that divinity that is our true nature, our true power. It's like any other vehicle. You know, if you buy a new car, or you buy a motorcycle, or you buy a boat, you buy an airplane, whatever, it comes with a manual. And as long as you follow the laws that are outlined in the manual in terms of how to operate the car, how to take care of the boat, how to fly the plane, etc., then you can expect and anticipate success because you're following the laws that govern that particular situation. So for us, our ancestors outlined that there are 11 laws that govern our lives, and these 11 laws are codified in what we call Ma'at. So Ma'at is the symbol that speaks about the 11 laws, or the laws of God, which are the foundation upon which the universe is created.
Well, you mentioned that we are divine beings and not human beings. Now, someone would say, well, let's take a look at the world today. Okay, and we see all of the things that are going on. We've got wars, rumors of wars. We've got starvation. We've got rapes. We've got crime, murders, all kinds of stuff going on. So that doesn't change the principle that the statement that we are divine beings, even if an individual is not manifesting his or her divinity, that does not take away from their divinity. Is just the fact that they just have not manifested that, and you're saying that we are here to grow, basically, to work on our divinity, to grow into the fullness, I guess would be the word. Is that correct, of the expression of that divinity? Would that be a correct statement?
Yeah, look at it this way. A Ferrari is a highly tuned machine. I don't know anything about it. I've never driven one, but I know it's a very fast car. And with an expert driver, the car can probably 150, 200 miles per hour. I don't know how fast it goes. But if you put me in that Ferrari, you're not going to get optimal functioning because I'm not that smart of a driver. If you put a six-year-old in that Ferrari, you're not going to get any functioning because they won't even know how to turn the car on. So because the potential is there, doesn't mean that just because the person who's driving the car is not able to maximize the potential of the vehicle, doesn't mean that the potential is not beyond the capability at that point of the individual. So the same is true with in terms of the spirit. Yeah, we are divine. Our essence is divine. We're essentially divine beings by nature. And as such, then our goal in life is to develop and awaken that divinity such that we can manifest it in the world as we live in the world. But just because I don't know how to use the car, turn the car on now, or I don't know how to drive it efficiently, doesn't mean that the potential is not there. And that's the problem we have. So we have to always, you know, it's the old saying, I think Les Brown said it, aim for the moon. If you miss, you'll land among the stars, or something of that nature. Meaning that you always got to look to the full potential of something. I mean, the greatest physicist in the world today was once a 5-year-old who couldn't probably spell physics. The greatest mathematician in the world today was once a 3-year-old who probably couldn't add 2 and 2 together and come up with 4. There's some 70-year-olds who have trouble adding 2 and 2 together and come up with 4. A couple of them are in the White House. But that's another discussion. So we have...
We'll do
we
that
have,
show.
Yeah, for real. That'd take a whole week. And you got to do it every week because every week the fool says something that's foolish. But anyway, Rex, his Secretary of State said it best, the man's a moron. But he's only a moron in terms of his functionality. His potential is divine, which gives us all hope. The problem is that he's not capable of accessing and developing those faculties within because he's so wrapped up in accepting the animal parts of the brain as the dominant factors in his decision-making, which is where humans are. So we got to understand that, and I'm going to really slow down and express this point as clearly as I can, because this is critical, this is foundational. This is what separates traditional Africa from, and many traditional societies, indigenous societies, in terms of people who are able to live in harmony and the social cohesiveness and development and peace and all these things that we romanticize about now. And we just think, well, there was something different back then. There was something different back then. They understand that who they were was different, and they cultivated into the character, into the society, into the culture itself, processes and techniques to awaken that divinity even in people who didn't know it was there. So we have to understand that we have this brain. We have a brain. We have four brains, really. And these four brains are the vehicles through which we interact with our environment. And the lowest two brains are what we call the animal parts of the brain. And they're called the animal parts of the brain because they're dominant brains in animals, the reptilian kingdom and the mammalian kingdom. But those brains are the oldest brains functioning in man, so that they're the strongest brains functioning. Their influence is strongest in people. So oftentimes, I think I read a statement somewhere that scientists estimate that 90 or 95% of all the decisions that people make are based on the animal parts of the brains functioning. Think
wow.
About that.
Wow.
90%. Nine out of ten decisions that everybody makes is based on how these animals in their head, these animal parts of the brain, are dictating their behavior. So then we have human part. Yeah. That's a fine statistic. Then we have the neocortex, which is the human part of the brain. Now, the human part of the brain is humans are supposed to guide the animals, right? You're supposed to tame the animals.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, the human doesn't know the difference between right and wrong. So if the animal says, "Eat me, Seymour," the human's going to give him a fork and knife. The animal says, "Take this drug," the human's going to consume the drug. The animal says, "Smoke this weed or smoke this cocaine or shoot this heroin or eat this pork or eat these whatever," the animal is controlling the cerebral cortex because it cannot know the difference between right and wrong. And this is a critical, important point, because this is the part of the brain that we go to school with. So when we go to school, we go to elementary school and middle school and high school and college, universities, etc., the part of the brain that's being educated cannot know the difference between right and wrong. Now, let's think about it. All the problems that exist in the world today are created by humans. And these are not the dumb humans. These are the most educated humans. Think about the horrors, the greatest horrors that mankind has inflicted on itself. The Atlantic slave trade, the Holocaust, climate change, whatever you want to pick out as your horror story, these are the most educated humans that create this thing. These aren't the folks who can't spell, read, and write. These are the folks that have been to Oxford and Cambridge and these other fine universities, Harvard and these other fine universities, who are creating these problems, because the human brain is 90% of the time influenced by the animal part of the brain, and animals don't know the difference between right and wrong. You cannot tell a lion that it's not correct to kill, because it's programmed into its spirit that it has to kill to eat. So it's not a moral issue, it's an amoral situation. And if the lion within a person's brain is dictating their behavior, then you have the same result. But fortunately, we have a fourth part of our brain, which is the prefrontal cortex. And when we read the literature on the prefrontal cortex, it's the part of the brain which is to cultivate the moral, the ethical, the higher mental functioning in man. But it's the baby part of the brain. It's only been around for about six million years or so, but functional about 100,000 years or so. Compared to the reptile part of the brain, which has been around for 500 million years. So we got this divine part of the brain, which is supposed to control the animals, guide the human, enable the human to find out what's right and wrong, so the human can control the animal urges within them, which is the part of the brain which allows the divinity within us to awaken so that it can guide us and make decisions based on our divine nature. But it's a baby, it's an infant. And it's not nourished properly. It's damaged by the foods and other substances and things that take place within the lifestyle of Western culture. So Western culture is the root of the problem. The reason why our people, our children, we cannot accomplish and awaken the divinity within us, because the Western man has no culture that will cultivate or guide or protect or promote the development of the divinity. He's still evolving to that point. So, but in African culture, historically, within our cultures, we have techniques and processes that are designed to awaken this divine part of the brain, to enable us to intuit the divine laws, the 11 laws of Ma'at, so we know what's right and wrong, and we function in the world based on that knowledge.
Well, let me ask you about then rebirth and evolution, because we've been here before, okay, and probably many, many, many times before. And my hope, and please correct me if I'm wrong, is that each time we come, we learn something, and hopefully we evolve, you know, to a higher level than probably a previous incarnation. But when you look at, again, the examples that I gave, crime, you know, all kinds of different wars and, you know, famine and, you know, all kinds of stuff, and, you know, people dealing with the animal brain, survival of the fittest, then you would think that if that's what's going on now, okay, and the majority and the vast majority of the people are making decisions based upon their conditioning or the animal brain, then I would assume that in previous incarnations, it would have had to have been at least as bad or worse, you know, because you would think these souls that are continuing to come in, these people, for lack of a better term, that continue to be born, and then you look at the world today, people would look at the world today and say it's in chaos, but people have been here before many, 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 many times. Do we evolve with each rebirth?
I guess that would, hopefully. Well, the potential is there. But again, we are a product of our environment. And the culture and the environment, the dominant culture on the world, the dominant influence in the world is Western culture. And there's no record within the Western experience of this kind of spiritual evolution taking place. Because he's spiritually still evolving. He hasn't got to that point yet. And the only way that you can move forward is if you're willing to humble yourself and accept guidance from a superior society or intellect or person or spirit. And the Western culture has...
Okay, everybody, we just lost Brother Orwa. I'm going to text him the number and have him give us a call back. So in the meantime, everybody, just hold tight. We're going to get back to this interview. It's getting good. All right, hold on. We'll be right back. Try Orwa again, all right? Thank you so much for your patience, everyone.
Hello?
Etepu, Orwa Jawanza, you're on the air.
Yeah, sorry, I pushed the little button on the phone here.
Right.
as I was saying, well, let me quote the great sage Ogutimile, the Dogon sage, who spoke to the French ethnologist Marcel Gréal. And in his conversation with Ogutimile, he says, Gréal asked him, well, what do you think about the white man? Now, this is around in the 1920s or 30s or 40s or someplace around there. And he said, well, we don't worry about the white man. He's a child of the moon. Time will take care of him. So what's he saying here? The moon is symbolic of youth. The moon is symbolic of a person who is still evolving, who hasn't light yet seen the light, because the moon doesn't have any light. The moon reflects the light of whatever's been shown to it. So the reason why we get a full moon is because the earth is not between the moon and the sun, quote unquote. But the earth moves between it and it obscures the light. So the moon is a reflective medium. It has no light of its own. So if it has no light of its own, then it can't generate light, and light is the basis of seeing. Light is the basis of knowledge. Light is the basis of truth. So you can't expect European culture to produce a culture of light because the people themselves are dwelling in darkness. And because we are now part of that culture, we're part of that environment, then it has dampened our light too. It's dampened the light, the whole light of the world. Even though, but there are people and cultures and individuals who are above that fray. So we, there are people who come into the world with the express purpose of helping to bring the light to those who are shunned. And some people will see it, some people won't. So some people will move forward in terms of evolutionary development based on their personal effort and personal inclinations, but most people are a part of the swamp that is West, is representative of Western culture, which is why your president can't drain the swamp because he's a part of the swamp. He's a swamp dweller. And if he drains the swamp, he's going to suffer himself. So he's just changing the folks who are managing the swamp keepers, as opposed to getting rid of the swamp.
Well, you know what's interesting to me is that you have people who will get caught up in the I guess for lack of a better term, and correct me if I'm wrong again, the illusion of separateness. But the law, we're talking about the law of Ma'at, everybody, but I just want to reference the law of Osir, which states that we are one, you know, that nothing and no one can be against me, that all experiences come to me for my reclamation of peace, that I may acquire wisdom and power. But people can get caught up in the illusion of separateness, and that in order for us to evolve to become that God man or God woman on this planet, that it's at some point even we have to see beyond the apparent differences of color. Is that correct?
Oh yeah. Well, that's the deal. That you know, Ma'at is the, in terms of Ma'at, the law of the Ma'at law of the 11 laws, which are all codified under the symbol of Ma'at. The law of Ma'at itself says that, you know, God needs us to come into the world. And fulfilling that need is the highest act of love. What does that mean? That means that the only way that the divinity can manifest in the world is if individuals can awaken that divinity within them. And the only way you can awaken that divinity within them is by manifesting and living these 11 laws. And by living these 11 laws, you evolve beyond the influences of the animal parts of the brain. Because the animal parts of the brain keep one centered in the lower parts of the spirit. The way in which a person evolves beyond the animal influences of the brain into the higher parts of the brain is by being able to see that everything is connected. The law of Ma'at talks about how everything is interdependent and interrelated in the world. So you have to see and understand that, you know, the old saying that I'm my brother's keeper is a broad metaphor for the reality of life itself. You know, it's the circle of life that's talked about in The Lion King. Everything is connected and interdependent and interrelated in the world. That's what Ma'at teaches us. So as long as I am looking at things from a personal, quote-unquote, perspective, from a self-interest perspective, then I am denying my ability to open myself up to the divine within me. I'm keeping the divine locked and blocked, which then denies the world the ability to come together. So, but you can only come together when you have the appreciation that there's some, that there's a part of you that is a part of everything else. And then it's not really coming together, it's just awakening the different aspects of your being and living through those different aspects of your being. So, fortunately, our ancestors codified this knowledge in stone in the pyramids, etc. And so they have these, the weighing of the heart scene. They have the information about the rituals of Ma'at, etc. The weighing of the feather against the heart. All of this is symbolic of the fact that if we're going to become the divine man or divine woman, the Osir, then we have to, our heart has to be as light as a feather. And for the heart to be as light as a feather, then it cannot be guided by the animal, cannot be guided by the human. We have to awaken that part of the brain, which enables us to see spiritually, function spiritually, ethically, morally, see the higher functions in life, and make decisions based on higher level thinking, which is what the prefrontal cortex represents. So that's the real critical piece. If we don't get to the point of understanding, as long as whatever the problems are that we have faced in the world, everybody's problems in the world are rooted in the understanding or the belief that they are human beings, or less. Those people that believe they're animals is even worse off. Until we accept the fact that we are divine beings by nature, then nothing's going to change in the world, because animals are going to do what animals are going to do. Giraffes are going to do what giraffes are going to do. Rabbits are going to do what rabbits are going to do. Lions are going to do what lions are going to do. Hyenas are going to do what hyenas, because that's the way they're programmed. And the animal influences within man is going to constantly keep man doing what they want man to do, functioning and responding and making decisions and acting out of the influences of the animal parts of the brain, which act from the five lower senses, touch, taste, feel, smell, and whatever the other one is, hearing.
Here. Mm-hmm.
So as long as we're basing our decisions on these five senses, which is pushing out the lower parts of the brain, the lower parts of the spirit, then we're constantly going to be wrapped up in this understanding, that belief that I'm separate from you, and therefore there's something that I can lose. I have something to lose by coming together with you, by working with you, because that's how I see the world. I see you as separate body, and I see me as separate body. That's the way the lower senses operate. But once I understand that the separateness that we perceive is only an aspect of our spirit, but not the true essence of our being, it's a different reality, because that which is truly our true self, that consciousness that is divine within us, is immaterial, meaning it cannot be divided, separated, or parceled off. It's beyond that. So the consciousness within me is the same as the consciousness within you, which is the same as the consciousness within the bird, the same as the consciousness within the roach, the same as the consciousness in the flower. There's only one consciousness, the divine consciousness. The difference is that it operates differently because the vehicle through which it's expressing itself is different. Just like we talked about earlier about if I put a six-year-old in a Ferrari, I put me in a Ferrari, I put a Dale Earnhardt in a Ferrari, you'll get different levels of functionality because the drivers are different. The consciousness right. is the same, but the driver is different. The car, you got to be able to operate the car on different levels. So the spirit is different. The rock is different from the bird, which is different from the roach, which is different from the lion, which is different from the human. But that modifies the consciousness, the driver of the world, the divinity within the world. Spirit is different, but then spirit is different in that only in that it represents, the differences represent aspects of a whole. It's just like the human body. The human body is composed of trillions of different cells, different kinds of cells, different lifespans, different functions, etc. But they all make up one body, and that one consciousness operates within. Well, some people have split personalities, so maybe two people. But at any rate, there's just one consciousness supposedly operating within my body, unless I give opportunity for another aspect of that consciousness to work through me. But the different parts of my body are all, they all separate and isolated, but they're all functioning as one. So each of everything in the world, every person in the world, everything in the world is a like a cell in the divine body. And as such, we each have our own role to play in the overall function of the divine body. And man, may I use the term man, it's a collective, is different from all other creations in that aspect of creation, in that we have the unique quality of free will. And free will is what we have to exercise in order to awaken our divinity. Meaning, we talked about how 90%+ of the decisions people make are based on the animal influences. Well, that's not an expression of freedom. That's an expression of giving in to force, power. as a expression of following a dictate, following an influence, following an instinct or a desire, a passion or whatever. But once I get to the point where I'm making my decisions based on is correct, what's true, which means that I'm allowing the higher parts of my brain to operate, I'm allowing the moral part of my brain to operate to control the animal influences of the lower parts of the brain, then I'm able to shift the paradigm and now function in the world as divine being. So now my heart is as light as the feather, because when I'm allowing the animal, when the animal's dictating, that's what makes the heart heavy. So Maat being the symbol of truth, that feather is a symbol of Maat, says that a person whose heart is as light as a feather is a person who is allowing, is not, is controlling the lower parts of the brain, the animal parts of the brain, with truth, which is what Maat symbolizes. So the application of truth to following the law is critical to our ability to awaken and become the divine beings that is our essence. And only by doing so can we, in fact, tap into and be function on the divine parts of the spirit. Because that's the final test before a person is able to tap into that unlimited power, that all-knowing qualities, that omniscient quality, that omnipresent quality, which is our true essence as divine beings that we are.
Well, let's talk about love for a moment, because in embedded in the law of Maat, God needs me to come into the world, and fulfilling God's need is the highest act of love. A lot of people have a misunderstanding of what real love is. You know, the human concept of love is quite selfish, but could you talk, I love you as long as you love me, you know, that sort of thing. Could you talk about the law of Maat and love? And just even the fact that God needs us to come into the world. You know, we've been socialized to think in many cases that we need God, which we do, okay? But the thought that God needs us is a foreign concept to a lot of people. Could you talk about that, God needing us to come into the world, and what love actually is as it relates to the law of Maat?
Okay, sure. Well, just look at the God needs us part. What does that mean?
Okay.
If God is truly an omniscient being, an all-knowing being, an omnipotent being, and an omnipresent being, an all-present being, then why would God need me in the world? Well, it's a simple little riddle. To be omnipresent means to be everywhere. But prior to manifestation of anything, right, because before there's manifestation and then creation, there is only spirit and consciousness. And the spirit is omnipresent. It's unlimited. It's boundless. It's like an unformed, if you can imagine clay.
Still with me, Orwa? Orwa, can you hear me? Okay, we've got a little technical difficulty, everybody. I'm going to ask you to hold on again, all right? We're going to get Orwa back on the show. Got an awesome interview going on here, and again, I appreciate your patience. Everybody, please hold. Brother Orwa? Orwa, are you with me? Okay, everybody, have a little patience. We'll get him back on and continue this fabulous interview. Okay,
oh,
everybody,
sorry.
Orwa, you're on the air? Okay. Yes, sir.
Okay. Sorry, this phone has a one of those buttons on the receiver, and so if I move the phone to my jaw a certain way, it pushes the button, which disconnects the call. Sorry.
No problem. Thank you so much. Yes.
Yeah. As I was saying, we can imagine that spirit is boundless energy matter without any demarcations, any forms, whatever, any shapes, whatever. It's just boundless energy. Well, in order to, if in the essential state, God is an omnipresent being, and its energy is boundless and it's undefined, then it truly can't be omnipresent because there's no place to be. To be omnipresent means there has to be you have to create every place possible and then be there. So to do that is why God created the world, to realize its potential as being an omnipresent being. Same thing with being omniscient. To know, be all-knowing, you have to create all things possible and then be there to know them, to experience them. So in this essential state, there is nothing known. There's no thing there. We know things. There's no thing there to know. So God creates the world, the universe, whatever we're going to call it, and then dwells there in order to know its true potential, realize its true potential. And the same is true with omnipotence. So therefore, when we say God needs us to come into the world, the fact of the matter is that God created the world in order to realize its full potential. And the only created vehicle that allows God to function in the world in its fullness is man, because all other created vehicles have limitations. They do not have free will. So that's what we mean by God needs us to come into the world. And fulfilling that is the highest aspect of love. People say all the time, God is love. Well, what does that mean? That means that understanding that everything is one. There is no separation. That's what true love is. True love is a selfless expression that I do something because it's needed to be done, not because I'm going to gain something from it. I mean, if my body is sick, and in order for my body to reestablish its homeostasis, I have to take a bitter herb like gentian, then I take the bitter herb not because I like the bitter herb, not because I expect anything out of the bitter herb, because it's needed to do that. So true love is selfless giving, seeking nothing in return, because it's needed in the world. There's a need for me to do this for this person, with this thing, and that's why I do it. As opposed to love, which the romantic love that Smokey Robinson wrote about, you know, that kiss me, not kiss you back love. You know, that's love on a lower level. There's actually three on the tree of life, or the 11 laws. There's three different expressions in terms of what we call love, per se. There's love, the emotional love, like a mother and a child, attachment love. That's the emotional love. It's based on our kinship, our relationship, our bond between one another. Then there's love that takes a romantic love. That's when we first have the opportunity to share with someone who we do not have an organic bond with. I mean, it's not my mother, it's not my brother, father, it's not my brother or whatever. It's someone whom I don't have an emotional attachment, but I have to cultivate this attachment for and this willingness to work for and share with. And then there's the ma'at love, which means that I give to whomever because it's needed, not because of some commitment that I made to you, not because of some relationship I have with you, not because we're of the same mother, born brothers of the same mother, etc., but because it's needed. So you could, quote-unquote, could be my, quote-unquote, enemy, but you need something, and I'm going to give it to you because that's what the whole needs, right? There's the most people in the world, even your president, most people in the world do wrong because they just don't know any better. They don't know what right is. They haven't cultivated it. They haven't learned it. They haven't been taught it. Their brain is not capable of accepting it. brain hasn't been developed right again, because the ability to know right and wrong and function in a right and wrong manner has to do with the development of the prefrontal cortex of the brain. And Western culture has built into it behaviors which undermine the development of the prefrontal cortex of the brain. So if I'm consuming alcohol, I'm minimizing my brain's development. If I'm consuming drugs, I'm minimizing my brain's development. If I'm consuming anger or frustration or any of these quote-unquote emotions, sensualism, whatever, I'm minimizing my brain's development. And if I'm minimizing my brain's development, then I'm also undercutting my ability to function outside the animal influences of my being. So the problem is that people are ill because the culture itself is ill, which is what we got to keep coming back to. It's not the white man, it's the Western culture itself. White people suffer from the same cultural problems that we are suffering from. Hence, we're all stagnant in our growth and development unless we accept and understand, find the teachings that promote the development of the higher parts of our being, that awaken the higher parts of our being, and begin to accept and live those teachings. Well, we talk about the prefrontal cortex of the brain and the importance of it. Well, if a person, but it's just not a matter of talking about it. There are things that you have to do in order to develop. But we talked about some of the things that undermines development, to diet, fat over, fried foods, fats overconsumption, fats, etc., alcohol, all those things undermine this development. But what are the things that enhances development? Well, scientists have proven that one of the major things that enhances the development of the brain, especially the prefrontal cortex of the brain, is meditation. So we find in our ancient cultures, in ancient Kemet and amongst the African different cultures in Africa, we have these processes that were built into the culture itself, which promote meditation, which as a means of civilizing the community, spiritualizing the community, making the community function on a social, moral, ethical way. But if you don't have that built into the fabric of the society, then your society is not going to be able to function in a spiritual, moral, and ethical way, which is what Western culture represents, which is where Western culture is. So in the African culture, we have these techniques like we talk about in my latest book, The Divine Kingship of Asante, for example. Amongst the Asante people, they have this thing called Nyamesu. And Nyamesu was a practice that the people of Asante used to do every morning. They would go out and get some water from Nyamedua, the tree of God, and they would circumscribe a circle in the center of the forehead while they visualized themselves addressing everything and everyone they met with the character of God. So that meditation process is what develops the brain that enables the person to then go out and function in that way. But if a person is not engaged in the meditation system, in ancient Kemet we had the meditation systems, the so-called declarations of freedom from sin, the declarations of freedom from sin, which are the so-called negative confessions of Maat, where every day, every night, a person would then visualize themselves, meditate on themselves, not living, not sinning. This is the way that spiritual culture, a spiritual cultivated, spiritualized people would behave. It's a process. It's a functional process. It's not about words. You can't talk somebody into spirituality. You can't meet someone into spirituality. It's a developmental system. And it has to affect the very aspects of our being that enable the spirit to operate and awaken the higher parts of the spirit, which is the prefrontal cortex of our brain. So that's where we are. And until we get to that point in our communities, then we're never going to have what we expect we want to have as unity, because unity is understanding that I am one with you, not because of our ethnicity or whatever, but because God needs us, me, you, to come into the world. And that's our love for one another is a manifestation of our love for divinity itself.
Well, then, could you talk about love for the wrongdoer then? Okay, because a lot of times people who aren't familiar with the law of Ma'at or the 11 laws of God, you know, when it comes to somebody, quote, doing them wrong, end quote, and may even have been tried in a court of law and quote, proven that they were wrong and sentenced or whatever because they were, quote, wrong, end quote, or maybe not even on that level, just, you know, somebody did something wrong to somebody, stole something from somebody. Could you talk about the love for the wrongdoer? And again, this would probably go back to the law of Ma'at. If we are one and I see the spark of divinity in my brother or my sister, and I realize that the law of Osir states that we're one, but the law of Ma'at now says that is taking that oneness to a whole nother level. You know, I've got to love this person regardless. Could you talk about that?
Well, loving is different from discipline. Right? Meaning, I can love you, but at the same time, I can discipline you. I can restrict your behavior, as we should with our children, for example. I mean, I love my child, therefore, I'm not going to allow my child to do something which is incorrect. I'm going to guide their behavior, mold their behavior so that they function in a correct way. But if they make a mistake, if they do the wrong thing, am I going to throw the child out the house? No. I'm going to still work with that child to help cultivate and awaken that, the understanding within the child that this is what's right and this is what's wrong. So again, as I said earlier, the majority of people in the world don't do things because they're evil. They don't do wrong because they're evil. They do things because they're ill. So we have to try to work on healing the illness within man, that manifests within people. Now, some people are more ill than other people, which means they need a different level of healing. Now, sometimes the healing, for example, let's just give a bizarre example. If a person is being psychotic, right, in order for that person to calm that person down, you have to restrain that person to administer the healing, the drug or whatever. So sometimes you have to restrain people because they're so far, the illness has manifested to such an extent that they're not capable of accepting the redirection at that point. So you have to gradually work on modifying and healing them so they can move to a point where they can begin to be self-directed again. So that's what prisons are supposed to do. That's what, you know, there's a verse in the Yi Jing, the Chinese book of wisdom, which says that prisons should not be permanent resting places. Well, which means what? That if a person has created a crime or done something wrong, there is when the wrongness is a manifestation of their illness, then we should be working toward healing the person so they can begin to come out and function as a whole member of society again. But it's possible, and there's different levels of illness, right? So we have to, everything has to be guided through wisdom, which means that's why we have the oracles. That's why Tuti exists. That's why Tuti and Ma'at are husband and wife, brother and sister, whatever you want to work with the metaphor. Meaning that in order to know truth, to live truth, you have to know what it is. And you have to know how to modify that truth and apply that truth in every given situation, which is what the oracle allows us to do. So if a person has done me wrong, quote unquote, and I'm put in a situation where I have the opportunity to affect that person in a positive way, and I go to God, I go to the oracle, and God says, give, seek nothing in return, then it's my responsibility to give to that person. But God may say this person is not ready for that. You know, it's the old saying, don't cast pearl to swine. So the only way to know which of these truths to apply is to have a system which can differentiate when and what and how what truth is in given to situation. So that's why the oracles are so important. So as long as we're just like, you can't just live your life based on spiritual principles, because spiritual principles are going to be conflicting us on different levels. There's a thing about turn the other cheek, there's a thing about hit them back. So how do I know which time to do what? Well, that's why I go to God. I go to the oracle. There's a time to spank the child. There's a time to hug the child. You got to know when is what the right behavior what's needed at that point. And the only way to know that is to tap into that omniscient quality that's a part of our being, which we don't have access to yet except through the use of the oracle.
Well, Brother Owa, in the last few minutes, and I know you've got an announcement to make concerning the trip coming up, but could you talk about, we've been talking to everybody about the law of Ma'at, one of the 11 laws of God, but just could you talk about for a moment the 11 laws of God as a role model? You know, oftentimes we look to people, people that we deem as positive influences, as role models on earth. We look to individuals who may have reached a particular level, whether it's, you know, in spirituality or whether it's in, you know, a human endeavor or something. Could you talk about the 11 laws as a role model for behavior?
Well, our ancestors created these anthropomorphic forms, right? So when you look at the so-called gods of ancient Egypt, they're part human, many of them are part human and part animal. And what that's saying is that within man, we have these animal influences, but we also have this divine influence. And so the goal is, the only thing that's not going to change is God within us. As long as I'm tapping into it and looking to it and awakening the God within me, then I'm going to be on the right path. But if I follow the example of someone and that one has not awakened the divinity within them, then they're going to falter. So the 11 laws represented the static model, role models that individuals were to pattern their lives' decisions after, toward guiding them toward the awakening of their divinity. So the 11 laws, starting with the top law, Amen, says peace is my nature, which means that in every given situation in life, the only natural response I should have is one of peace. So anytime I'm confronted with a situation and I don't respond peacefully to that situation, then I'm not awakening that aspect of my being. But what does that mean? What does it mean to respond peacefully? Why is that important? Well, because science has shown that anytime we respond out of our emotions, anger, frustration, whatever, that several things happen. So I have a conflict, I have a challenge, a difficulty with a person, a disagreement, whatever it is. If I respond out of my quote-unquote emotions, if I allow the animal within me, you know, my rabbit gets offended or my lion gets offended or whatever, so I respond out of that animal part, then I'm going to, science has shown that I'm going to undermine my ability to give an appropriate and positive response in that situation, because it lowers my IQ, right? And it floods my body with these harmful chemicals, all of which undermines my ability to function properly in the situation. But if I remain at peace, then I have the optimal brain capacity, brain power functionality, and my body is not being toxified by hormones and cortisol and that kind of thing. So therefore, I can give a better response. Therefore, I can muster the peace. You know, a classic example is, you know, in the old Kung Fu movies of old. I haven't seen many of the new ones, but they all seem kind of carry the same principles where, you know, a person is trying to initially, they're wronged, or someone in their family, their teacher or their master was wronged. So initially they try to go out and avenge their master's wronging. And when they try to do this, they get beat up by the bad guy, right? Mm-hmm. So then they go in, they learn to meditate and to go within, et cetera, and they learn that they have to respond to the situation in a peaceful manner to be successful. Not that they're not going to fight, but that they can't lose the mental battle, because if they lose the mental battle, they lost the physical battle. So mm-hmm. they could be in the midst of a fight and, you know, the guy could cut off their arm. But they don't freak out. Oh, my arm is gone, because once you lose that mental body, you know, you lose the battle. So the guy, instead of freaking out that because his arm is cuffed, he picks up the arm and uses it as a weapon. You know, he maintains his peace.
Right.
Well, that's how we have to approach everything in our lives. So we're going to constantly have these challenging situations, opportunities. And they're nothing more than opportunities for us to awaken and strengthen the spiritual muscle of our being. You know, if you want to get physically strong, you have to apply resistance, force to resistance. So you go into the gym and you pick up that dumbbell and you lift it. So you're applying force, your force to the resistance, which is what the weight represents. And that builds physical muscle. Well, as above, so below. If I want to strengthen my spirit, then the challenges of life are the dumbbells. That could be your boss or somebody else that you have to deal with. And by responding properly in that situation, then I'm going to cultivate my spirit. I'm going to strengthen my spirit. So that's the key. So the 11 laws, learning the 11 laws, and then applying these 11 laws in each of the situations where they apply in life is the key to awakening the functioning and allowing the God, which is my true essence, to function in the world through my being, which is what the solution to the world's problems is. As if all of us, think about this, if all of us had as our goal the understanding that I'm a divine being, and as such, everything I come in contact with, every situation I come in contact with, I'm going to respond as God would respond to that situation. And let's say we don't always hit it, but the fact that we're shooting for it means that the world is going to be transformed overnight.
Well, everybody, my special guest is Orwa, Dr. Orwa, Hehe Metarine Comet, author of two fabulous books. This latest book is The Divine Kingship of Asante, a model for sustainable development of self and community. Also, African Names, the ancient Egyptian keys to unlocking your power and destiny. Brother Orwa, I want to just ask you one more question before we talk about your trip coming up. And that is because you mentioned the oracles, and we're talking about love and Ma'at, and you gave an example of somebody has a, one of the challenges might be the supervisor, but we touched on this in a past show. We were talking about in the show that we did on relationships, but a lot of people's challenges may come from their marriage. Somebody needs to hear this out there, their marriage, and somebody, you mentioned the oracles. So let's say you take somebody who consulted the oracles, and the oracle said, yes, this is the person. This is the person that's for you. You get a good reading on this person. And then you get into the marriage, and you start experiencing, quote, challenges, end quote. Could you talk about, again, back to our purpose for being and how even that through the challenges within a person's marriage, because these people are closest to you. You see them probably more than you see anybody else. So they're going to pose the greatest opportunity, I'll say, and slash challenge for spiritual development. Could you talk about that? Because someone could assume that, I went to the oracles on this person, you know, I don't know why I'm getting all these challenges. I thought it was going to be smooth sailing.
Well, let's look at it this way. The oracle is that expert in the situation, whatever the situation is. So let's just break it down to a human situation. Let's say you have an illness, right? And if you have an illness, then who do you go to?
Go to the doctor.
The doctor. He's the expert. She or he's the expert, right? And they give you a prescription. This is what you need to do to overcome this illness, this weakness or whatever it is in your situation. Well, you have to do something to get well, right? So the doctor is going to prescribe for you the situation. The illness is there to make you stronger, to make you, to cultivate or develop something within you that's out kilter. But it's the application of the techniques of the application of the instructions that the doctor gives you, which is going to indicate how well you become. So if you're not going to follow the instructions, then you're not going to get well. You're going to just be languishing. But if you follow the instructions, then you're going to get well. So the relationships that we have, the situations that we come in contact with, are all there for one purpose, to promote the healing that is needed so that we can awaken the divinity within. And as long as we accept the fact that this situation is there for my... Once I've identified that this is what God says I should do, and once the other person also has that understanding and acceptance, then whatever we have, whatever comes up, are going to be the opportunities for us to do just that, to awaken our divinity. Because you have, it's done through work. Everything is done through work. We cultivate strength through application of force to resistance. No two people are going to see things the same way. No two people are going to approach things the same way. But no two people are always going to be right, or one of them going to be right. Situations can happen where both of them are wrong. They both have an idea, but their ideas are different, but both ideas are wrong. So that's why the oracle is there, to help guide us, to give us the insight into what's the correct thing, what's the divine thing to do, what's the thing that's going to awaken my divinity. Because I want to make to emphasize this as the last point, that people talk about evolution. We learn about evolution in school. Well, the fact of the matter is, man is still evolving. And that's the point we have to, that's the thing that's not taught in school. It's taught, evolution is taught as though it's a static reality. No, man is still evolving. And the evolution that's taking place is the evolution that's moving us toward our spirituality. That's where the brain comes in. Like we talked about the four parts of the brain, right? Well, the reptile brain came on the scene 500 million years ago. And then it evolved. And the mammalian brain came on the scene about 250 million years ago. And then the cerebral cortex came on the scene about 7 million years ago. And that, then the prefrontal cortex came a functional part about 100,000 years ago. So this evolution is taking place. And as we evolve toward awakening our divinity, the goal of life, again, is to awaken the divinity so that God can function on the earth as it is in heaven. That part is accurate. But the only way you can do that is by understanding that we're still moving toward that. We're still evolving. And the only way we can understand that is if we realize that every situation in life, no matter where it's coming from, the majority of situations in life are there to help us cultivate and strengthen our spirit, because we evolve through spirit. Our consciousness is the same. The driver is the same. But as it learns, it's able to function in a better way with the vehicles that it's put into. So,
everybody, I know that somebody needed that, and, you know, hey, just that was freebie. You know, I just want to thank you, Brother Orwa, again, for all of the work that you've done. You know, you take time out of your schedule to be a guest on my show, and I don't even like to say my show. It's our show. You know what I mean? It's our show. We're one. So if it's my show, it's your show, and it's everybody's show that tunes in and listens. It's our show. So I encourage everybody to share our show with other people that you know. You can share the link. All you have to do is just copy and paste it and, you know, just share it, okay, because we're trying to make the world a better place. We're trying to give God the vehicle, or be the vehicle through which God comes and expresses itself in the world, okay, because God needs us to come into the world, and fulfilling God's need is indeed the highest act of love. Brother Orwa, you've got a trip coming up. I know you want to share that information with the family. Could you please share the trip? You're going to Africa, everybody. So if you've never been and you've always wanted to go to Africa, then, and you don't want to go by yourself, okay, because you don't know anybody, okay, well, you have an opportunity to take a trip with somebody who's been there many, 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 many times. Brother Orwa, could you talk about the trip that you got coming up in January?
Sure. Well, we're going to Ghana and Benin, leaving January the 1st, returning January 15th. 2 weeks, we'll be having the opportunity to leverage the relationships that we've been cultivating in Africa for the last 30-plus years. in the Asante Kingdom and other places in Ghana, as well as in Benin, where we will visit the Songhai Center. And we'll also participate in the festivals, the annual festivals, the National Festival of Benin, which is on January the 10th. Benin is, the national religion of Benin is Vodun. You know, it has preserved its national culture, spiritual culture. And so we'll participate in that, the ceremonies of that particular thing. But we also visit the Songhai Center. And for anyone who's ever uttered the word sustainable, you need to come visit Songhai. Songhai is a sustainable community in Benin. They generate everything for themselves. They make their own energy. They make their own machinery. They grow tons of organic food. They manufacture. They transform. Nothing is wasted at Songhai. So what we consider waste is used and transformed into something useful within the community. It's a fantastic project. It's incredible, and you got to see it to believe it. You know, the world is talking about sustainable this, sustainable that, but the solution, the principles that for sustainability are operating alive and well in Africa right now. And so I love to take people there because people have to see it to believe it. So if they're interested,
you know, it's
in taking
be...
a trip, they
yeah.
should contact me. They should call me at 202-497-2499. And them enrolled.
You know, that's got to be something for you to have gone, and it's been to Africa as many times as you have been, and then taking people, I'm sure you've taken people on their first trip to Africa, and seeing the emotional, the joy or the whatever you see when you see people that have gone for the first time. From the expression of, oh, I didn't know it was like this. I mean, because a lot of people here in this country have gotten ideas about what Africa is, and then when they go, you know, they're like, oh, they got cars. You know what I'm saying? Oh, they got skyscrapers over here, you know. And just seeing the people going home for the first time, that's got to be something. Even when you think back on your first trip, I think you went to a Durban your first time, right?
Yes. Yes, it's a fun. I have never taken anyone. I've taken a lot of people to Africa. I've never taken anyone who didn't enjoy their trip. And I've taken a lot of people on their first trip, a lot of students, young people, you know, because they have a lot of the, you know, we all get misinformation about Africa, about what goes on in Africa, about African people. And there's nothing better to undermine or to undercut the misinformation, the mispropaganda that is pushed on us about our brothers and sisters in Africa, and to go there and see it for yourself. And so I urge everyone to take that trip.
And again, that's going to be from January. It's going to be for 2 weeks starting on January the 1st. You're leaving on the 1st?
Yes, leaving on the 1st. You start 2018 at home.
Wow. Everybody, make sure that you give Oba a call. If you've never been to Africa and you've always wanted to go, but you just didn't want to go by yourself, you know, if you wanted to go with somebody, a group of people who knew their way around, so you wouldn't just be, you know, over there just not knowing anybody. I mean, so go with somebody that's been, that has relationships there, okay, and can just, you know, be that guide for you and get that experience, and then I'm sure that your life will be changed forever. When you come back home, you'll be a different person. You'll go one way and come back totally different. Brother Orwa, please give your number again for those people that are interested. If you're interested and you want to go, okay, give Brother Orwa a call at this number.
202-497-2499.
Okay, now in order to be a part of the group that goes on the first, do they have to, and I guess you'll get this information when you call, do they have to have registered by a particular point? Is there a deadline that they have to have registered by?
Yes, well, the first, we're past the point of the first deposits, and et cetera, but we still make it happen, so we'll work that out individually.
Okay. Everybody, my special guest today has been Orwa, Dr. Orwa Hehimetu Ryan Comet. Again, author of African Names, The Ancient Egyptian Keys to Unlocking Your Power and Destiny. If you never heard of that book, you definitely need to consider getting this book. If you've ever thought about adopting an African name, a Kemetic name in particular, then you definitely need this book. It's not just picking one that sounds good. There's a way to do it. There's a process involved. Also author, Divine Kingship of Asante, A Model for Sustainable Development of Self and Community. Brother Orwa, how can they get these books if they're interested in purchasing either of your two awesome works? How can they get those books?
Well, they can. The Divine Kingship book is actually on Amazon. Or they can email me at enkamet.phd@gmail. That's E-N as in Nancy, K-A-M as in Mary, I-T as in Thomas, .phd@gmail. And then they can do it through PayPal. We can pay through PayPal.
They can get African names there as well?
As well.
By emailing you?
Yes.
Brother Orwa, thank you again, my brother. Awesome. It's always a pleasure, an honor. You really broke down the law of Ma'at. Powerful, powerful discussion. Again, everybody, share the link. That's part of Ma'at, too, sharing, okay? We're trying to be divine. We're trying to express, well, we are divine. We're trying to express that divinity. We're trying to manifest that divinity. And by sharing this link, then you will be actually helping in the process of helping the planet to evolve. Okay, this is powerful information. This is information that just by sharing it, you've done a part. You've played a part in the evolution of the planet and the species, us, those who are endeavoring to be and express, shall I say, our divinity. So I encourage you to share it. It's one thing to like it. You know, you hear, you know, you'll post a link on Facebook and somebody might like it. Well, if you really like it, share it. I'd rather you click share than like, because if you share it, I know you liked it, okay? So just share it. Just click share. Share the link. I'll know that you liked it, and in the process, you'll be helping to make this planet better for not just yourself, your person, but your children, their children, and beyond. Brother Orwa, again, as always, thank you. Any parting words for our listeners tonight?
No, I think we've said as much as we can say. So looking forward to continuing the conversation and the work.
Well, thank you, my brother. Again, may Neter be with you and to continue to just impart wisdom to you as you continue to do the work that you do. I thank you. I say Neterach to you, my brother, to Neterach, to Shechem Shechem, Dr. Ra'u Nefa, Amen, the first, to all of the Orwats and Shechems and Shechems and Orwats of the Osara Society. I say Neterach to you. Keep up the good work, and my airways are always open to you. You're always welcome as a guest. Thank you. Tu'ahu, thank you for your time tonight.
Thank you. Atap.
Atap. Everybody, that is Orwa, Dr. Orwa, Duran Kamen. We were discussing the 11 laws of God, the law of Ma'at in particular. Again, everybody, share this information, because if you liked it, then, of course, someone that you know, if you have like minds, friends, family, they need it. We all need it. So I encourage you to just share the link. The show's going to be archived, so you can always go back and listen to it again and again and again. The other 11 laws of God are in the archives as well. We've actually done the whole series on the 11 laws of God, and we had to come back and do Ma'at, and we have to also go back and do Amen because of the there were some technical difficulties when we did the Amen show as well. So we had to go back, and we'll be doing that one again. So again, make sure if you have ever thought about going to Africa and you've never been, and the only reason you've never been was because you didn't know anybody, you didn't want to go over there and not know where to go, or, you know, well, now you don't have that excuse. All right, get in contact with Brother Orwa and make it happen and see for yourself. Okay, you've been fed a lot of images. Okay, now go and see for yourself. And when you get back, call in and share. Once you get back, call in. We'll bring you on the air and you can talk about it, all right? Talk about your experience over there. Everybody, my name is Jawanza. I truly appreciate you. This show is called Jawanza for Life, also known as Health, Wealth, and Divine. at Awesome Archives. I encourage you to scroll down the archives, and again, you're going to be pleasantly surprised with what you hear. By the way, I got a surprise for you. On Thursday, today's the 24th, so that'll be the 26th of October, my special guest is going to be Orwa Amtahudi Kamo. That's right, Orwa Amtahudi Kamo. We're going to be talking about the science of comedic spirituality. That's right, the science of comedic spirituality. Now, that's going to be from 10:30 a.m. Okay, that's going to be 10:30 in the morning. All right, so that's this Thursday. Don't miss that show. We're going to be talking again about the science of comedic spirituality. All right, so make sure you spread the word on that too. So everybody, again, I appreciate you. Thank you so much for your time. My name is Juwanza. Who am I? I'm the one who in giving receives more. Who are you?